Ici es martes y mi pronunciación es terrible. Que está escuchando
Kyle.
We're not on LXL.
Oh.
Anymore. We're not on El Pozo.
Well, in that case, if it's Friday and you're listening to us in our native language, then it's Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. My name is Kyle Bigelow. Joining me in studio is current Wildcat and future Pulitzer winner, Lexington Sours.
I don't know about that, but thanks.
Dexterously working the potentiometers like Billy Joel at the Garden is Ben, the Benjineer Wolf.
Hey, Kyle.
You can text the show at Bluegrass Bios on Twitter. We have a great show planned for you today because we're changing stations. I thought it'd be inappropriate to have on the two Lexington Community Radio staffers that keep both this station, the English-speaking WLXU, and the all-Spanish 95.7 WLXL, which was our old home. Math is not my strong suit, but that's one person per radio station. These guys have a lot on their plate that they deal with every day, so we're happy to have them in. So because we're jumping frequencies and these two have been so accommodating with everything our show has needed, and because our other guests didn't email me back, our first guest will be...
Wasn't passive-aggressive at all. You know who you are.
Yeah. Our first guest will be Lexington Community Radio's general manager, Chuck Clenny at 1220, and then Rosa Powlin at 1. I don't... What is her her title? Do you know? She's like an administrative organizer of sorts. She
I believe so, yeah.
She takes care of a lot of the... the day-to-day. She's the glue.
She has many irons. Yes.
But that is not all, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, there's more?
Everyone's favorite podiatrist and Uber driver, Dr. Alex Estrada, will also be live with us in the STEAM Academy on East 6th Street to talk about... Well, whatever. Like, I know that we're going to end up talking about the... the national conventions, right? I know.
Well, we don't have to a lot.
Yeah. Do you guys have stuff that it's just,
sure.
I know you do.
Yeah, you know I do.
Okay. I think I'll let, and Lex, you always have your own brand of idealism to throw into the mix whenever.
Right.
So I'll go slam heroin out in the parking lot or something.
But I do understand you're being after 2 weeks of two parties and two conventions. I can understand being a little fatigued.
It's political overload.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And I've watched too much of it in both weeks. I always, every 4 years, I promise myself I'm not going to watch like a ton of it. And I end up watching like a ton of it.
Did you binge on it?
Yeah. I binged.
Binged?
Yeah, not quite.
Not quite all the way binged. Lex, do you absorb all this stuff at a high rate?
I didn't watch as much of it as I would have liked to. I work late in the evening, so I missed a lot of it. I caught the evening speeches in the last few. But I enjoyed different parts of the conventions. I thought they both did a good job.
Okay. I'm sure. So you didn't binge it either? You like bide it if Ben's
yeah.
stayed in
that's what we're doing.
Like you Biden.
Like it's like horse or something. Yeah, so Alex will be in here.
You did not watch them?
No, I'm not interested in any of this.
It's your nation.
I watch, I do enough, I do the cliff notes, so I've seen videos on, I know enough about what happened at the RNC where Ted Cruz didn't endorse Trump and he got booed, and they had some weird graphic about the percentage of time that Donald Trump was speaking that there was applause and how many applause breaks there were. Like, it's just insane. And then more email business hackery with the Hillary thing. Like, and now I keep learning about Gary Johnson, and I like all the stuff that he says, but he just seems like, I don't know. Like, he doesn't seem very presidential to me, I guess.
I agree 100% with 50% of what he says. And then 0% with the other 50%.
Sure, which is sort of, that should be like the libertarian motto, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Okay. I wanted to start the show today, and we're going to bring Chuck on in about 10 minutes, but because we're moving stations, one of the things that was on the top of my mind, I know we tend to get meta here. Sometimes we'll have production meetings on air or squabbles on air. I appreciate that out of a show, because
we're like reality radio.
Exactly, right? Uncut.
That's true.
We're changing the name.
That's right.
Uncut, and we're not putting on air. We're not putting. We have, and we're real reality. We have no writers. This is how we talk when we're off the air.
Yeah, stop being polite and start being real. Is that available?
No, I'm pretty sure that's trademarked.
Darn it.
For a long, long time, I think that's been trademarked.
I guess I was wondering if you guys could talk about, because I don't actually know this, like why, I know how you both kind of got into this and how you're into the show, but I guess my question is like why? Like, why radio?
You want me to go first?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, Ben, please.
Well, actually, it was when I got into podcasts and started to listening to them, like,
who? You know,
2008, 2009. Well, first it was, I think Ricky Gervais was, like, the only guy doing anything. And then, I was watching Lost religiously every week, and they said, for more stuff, go to abc.com.
Okay.
So I went to abc.com, and they said, oh, the guys who write the show will answer your questions about Lost in our podcast. And I said, oh, what's a podcast? And listen, I have many questions about the show. And I looked forward to that podcast almost as much as I looked forward to the show, because those two guys were so engaging. And even when they weren't talking about the show, they were talking about themselves. And then I think it was Adam Carolla kind of moved over, and he was really popular. And then Mark Maron.
Were you into Carolla?
Yeah, definitely when he first started, and before it became kind of like his current morning radio kind of format, when he was doing his sort of one-on-one stuff, I was really into that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I was broke, and I had no money, so this was free. This was free.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a job that I could, they were nice enough to let us put the earbuds in, because I was just working with Excel and numbers all day. Average a half a phone call a day, did not, you know, so I could have the headphones on. So I would listen to about three or four a day for a long, long time, unless I was really busy. And so just by listening to that, that kind of renewed my interest in just audio and interviews and by osmosis radio. And then this thing popped up, and I thought, oh, good. Maybe I can see what I've learned from 8 years of listening to people being interviewed.
And you have technical skills from Full Sail,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This stuff kind of is some nature to you.
The board we're using now is very simple compared to the audio mixing boards we were using.
I've seen the ones from...
They're huge.
Yeah, enormous.
They're huge.
Huge.
They're the best mixing boards. They're the most luxurious mixing boards.
Okay.
They have the best buttons.
I can dig
and
it.
And the best levels.
Now, Lex, I know that you sort of got roped into this through Khaki, and and you prefer the pen over the mic.
I do. The live thing kind of makes me a little nervous. I'm worried I'm gonna misstep. It's nice when I can edit out my own stupidity. But I grew up. My mom and I were always in the car. We were always traveling. I lived in the country, so going to school or going other places was always a car activity. And always listened to NPR, to local talk shows, things like that. So really getting comfortable with the idea of how someone was interviewed, of the way radio could become an art form, and focusing on that. That was kind of how I was brought up. I mean, listening to This American Life and to Car Talk and to shows like that just really stick out in my mind, and I still listen to. People make fun of me all the time because you get in my car and it's either this station or another station that's totally not like the cool station. And I got
you have NPR blasting with the bass
Oh, yeah.
With the bass going.
Oh, yeah.
And the car bouncing up and down.
Oh, yeah.
To Terry Gross.
To Radiolab. Yes. Yeah, Terry Gross.
Yes.
I used to love Car Talk as a kid. Car Talk was on the way home from church every Sunday.
Yes.
So we always listened to that.
Rest in peace.
Car Talk.
One of them, right?
Yes.
Oh, did one of them die? Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that.
For me, coming home from church, it was always the cooking show. I forget what it was called, but that was always the one. So coming home, you were hungry, you'd been at church, and then, I don't know, we just heard delicious recipes and how to fix food, and I think that's probably why I'm such a foodie now, because I listen to that. But then...
So think that Saturday Night Live sketch with Alec Baldwin, and you think the cooking show's on.
Sure.
On NPR.
Yeah.
Are you too young to remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
What?
Oh, that's the NPR sketch from Saturday Night Live. I'm used to this being a universal thing.
I'll Google it.
Oh, please.
Later.
She's lying.
I'll tell you I did.
Either way, I mean, for both of you guys, it sort of sounds similar to mine, too, which is you sort of just, I mean, for Ben, you know, you were at work and you had an opportunity to listen to a bunch of things. I know a lot of people that they just, you know, guys that are painting interiors in the summer and have 7.5 hours, but it's just mindless and they kind of keep themselves going with 3 hours at a time of Joe Rogan, who's another one of my personal favorites.
He's great.
And I share your sentiments about Corolla. I don't know why he decided to go back to a format. It'd be like...
Well, it's a little too much of the morning zoo crew kind of format. But when he has a guest on, it's fine. The live shows are still really good.
Right, yeah.
And when he has on people who aren't like-minded and they scuffle a little bit, I miss
Teresa Strasser, but that's not...
Oh, that's a whole thing, yeah.
And then Lex... similarly, like you're saying that you had a long drive to work or to school every day for years and years. I kind of grew up out in the country too and had a 25-minute drive to school every day. And liked, even though, I was a kid, I would turn on Howard Stern, which was still like sort of like kind of awful at the time. But he was doing sort of interesting things. And when you... By osmosis, as you said, Ben, you sort of start getting these instincts to interview people, and it kind of becomes a second instinct like that.
And then you sit down and you do it yourself, and then you start out emulating somebody you really, really admire, and that's almost across the board in whatever you end up doing for a living.
Sure.
If you're fortunate enough to get to do something you want to for a living. And then after a while, you kind of figure, oh, I can't be somebody else. And then you start bringing yourself to it. But there are little things here and there that you pick that stay with you that I'm sure, you have emulated your heroes. But then you find your own voice almost literally here.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of how it works usually.
When everybody has their own... what they think sounds right or what question they think is most important, which I think is unique about having three of us, is there's three different point of views, three different questions, three different sounds coming through that makes it really different. But it's one of the things that makes radio unique. You can always hear that, and it's very conscious. You can't always read that when you're writing.
Awesome.
Very nice.
I love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to bring in Chuck because I want to spend... a little bit extra time with him, and he doesn't have to make much of a commute, so we're just gonna hijack him for a little bit. This is Bluegrass Bios on WLXU. I have to get used to saying that. We'll be right back after this music. We are back on Bluegrass Bios, WLXU Lexington Community Radio. We're also fortunate to have in studio with us Mr. Charles Clenny, the GM of this fine radio operation and both of the stations within it. Chuck, thanks for making the trip to see us, man.
Yeah, no problem. it was tough to find.
Glad you weren't busy.
It was tough to find the place.
We've been planning on having you come in and talk to us for a while because you're such an eclectic dude. So to cover the bios portion of the show, maybe you can explain where you grew up here in Lexington.
Well, actually, I grew up in Cincinnati.
Okay. Well, there we go.
In Northern Kentucky. I came down here in 2004 to go to school at UK. Didn't really know anything about Lexington. Honestly, had only been here once for orientation before I moved here. So,
well, how'd you choose to come here then?
I had my father went here, and I just had a lot of friends, fellow friends and their older siblings who went to UK, and just decided that it was the perfect spot that was far enough away from Cincinnati to still feel like I'm somewhere else, but close enough that if I needed to go home, you know, it's just an hour drive up 75.
What did you come here to study?
I came here to study English and art, particularly art studio. And then when I got here, I decided to switch to English, as I found that UK has such a strong poetry program.
Okay.
That was more my bag.
And you're still involved in poetry in Lexington to some extent, right?
I am, yeah. So I do a few events around town. I've been a long-standing figure, if you will, in the Holler Poet series with Eric Scott Sutherland, which is actually rounding up. I think there's two left right before Holler 100, which shout out to Eric Sutherland, E-Rock, that's for doing that. This 100 months in a row of putting that poetry community together. So it's
where is that held?
It's held at Al's Bar. Typically, I think it's, I mean, the dates kind of fluctuate, but it's roughly usually the last Wednesday in of the month.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really, I mean, it's pretty incredible, the community that Eric's put together.
Describe for people who may not know what kind of goes into that event and what it entails.
The Holler Poet Series is typically an open mic at the beginning, and then a musical act, and then two featured poets, typically, you know, folks coming in from all over the U.S., and then
clearly in the community.
Yeah, and clearly in the community too. Like we're repping Kentucky literati pretty hard. So that goes on, and then after that, another musical guest, and then the second open mic, and then sometimes the music plays after that. So it's really an opportunity to mix, you know, young writers and some folks who have never been on the stage before, have never shared their poetry, giving them a vehicle to share it amongst, you know, professionals and folks who are, you know, all over the place.
How did you get involved in radio?
That's a great question. So when I came down here in 2004 to go to school at UK, I had some time after an astronomy class, and I kind of thought, like, all right, I need to get involved here, because I had always been involved in high school in a variety of things. Like, I was a student body president in my high school. So when I came to UK, I was like, oh my God, I need to do something. I need to fill my time with something. And so I decided after this astronomy class to just walk around aimlessly around UK to get to know Lexington a little better. Not this Lexington, but...
Right.
And so I...
There's a joke there, but
yeah.
Leave that one.
It's a bad one. So anyway, long story short, I was walking around UK, and then I walked past WRFL, which WRFL is UK's student-run radio station. But it's not just students. It's half community members, half students.
What building was that in at the time?
It was in the Student Center,
okay.
So right under the Grand Ballroom.
Gotcha.
And so I walked by, and I saw all these stickers there and was kind of blown away, like, wow, okay, what is this? So I walked in, and at the time, Michael Powell, who was the general manager at the time, was doing a show. And I walked in and asked him about it, and I realized he was playing a track off the new Cure album, the self-titled album that came out. And, you know, I asked him what he thought about it, and he was like, oh, this album isn't very good. So I was like, all right, we need to talk. And so we just had a discussion about this album, and he's like, you should fill out an application. And then I did, and did a 3-to-6 show for a year. And then after that, did a 12-to-3 hip-hop show called Underground Beef.
Underground Beef.
Yeah. Awesome. And then after that, yeah, I started doing a 8-to-10 show, and just the rest was history. And 12 years later, I'm still doing a show on Tuesday night from 10 to midnight over there. So,
what was the music scene like, and how involved did you get in music in Lexington?
I got pretty involved. I mean, by nature of being associated with RFL, it's just a whole community of people that come together and unite around music, live music, and sharing music. I would say I got pretty involved in it, booking, but also just supporting it and checking things out. I mean, at the time, the Dame downtown was was really the, besides the shows that WRFL was putting on, was kind of the only game in town. Nick Sprouse and Michael Powell were running the show and, you know, bringing in folks way before, you know, Arcade Fire, Mogwai, these huge acts came in and played at the Dame to less than 1,000 people. And that was really, you know, that was a house that RFL built, you know. And I think WRFL, not to, you know, promote another station on this station, but I mean, it's the same team. We're all in it for the same reasons. And really, it's the keystone of a lot of music and music culture here in Lexington. And without it, you know, I don't think a lot of the things that go on right now would still exist.
Well, it shares a lot of DNA. I'm sorry, Lex.
It's okay.
Right? Deborah obviously was heavily involved in creating RFL in, what, 85?
Yeah, Deborah, when she was a councilwoman, gave RFL, I think, the last $2,500 they needed to go on the air.
To Khaki Urch, who also aided in the construction of this studio.
Exactly. And shout out to Professor Khaki Urch over at UK School of Journalism. She, yeah, she wrote an article for the Kentucky Colonel that basically gave students a coupon that kind of said, do you want community radio or not? Do you want independent radio in Lexington or not? And, you know, cut this out, mail it in, bring it over to the hall. And yeah, and then that was her physical support. So when she was able to go to the president and the administrators, and she could say, hey, look, all of these students want this, so let's make it happen. So, and she was pretty instrumental in getting this station off too and getting the structure of everything put together. So
how important is radio to the local music scene? I know you said that WRFL was instrumental kind of in creating the Dame and the house that became, but how will this station help and how will other stations help it grow?
Well, I really think in a town like Lexington, where anyone who's been here for a period of time can see the ebb and flow of venues, of live venues that come and go. You know, the Dame is the biggest, the most recent one, but also there's Cafe Element OP, the Rockledge, you know, all of these venues that were continuously bringing in folks way before they were huge, and even when they were, you know, closed down, and new things pop up. And I mean, even though the Dame closed down, you know, Al's Bar came up, you know, Willie's came by and right. did the bluegrass thing. So, you know, there's a wide variety of things that pop up. But I think the reason I mention all that is because in the process, WRFL had been a constant, had right. constantly been bringing in live music and, you know, incredible acts. Like, 95, they brought in Outkast on the Stankonia tour, you know, KRS-One, like, all these just tremendous names.
Right.
RFL brought them in because it's the student fees from UK that's able to allow WRFL to bring in these artists and bring these like national acts to Lexington when, you know, these other venues were, even though they were successful in bringing in folks, you know, they were struggling financially too. Like, running a venue in Lexington is not an easy task at all. And you can see that if you look through the history of what's come and gone.
Well, I don't know if it's the history of Lexington in general, but the city is so arts focused and so music and, just kind of the culture of Lexington is to enjoy those events and to enjoy local music and mm-hmm. art.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I just recently had an Australian couch surfer stay with me, and I took her to an event where, you know, there were some local poets reading, and she even said to me, she said, you know, I've never been to an event where an audience was so respectful of poets reading on stage. Mm-hmm. And honestly, yeah, it really put into perspective. Yeah, Lexington, I mean, I know we had the old nomenclature of Athens of the West, but I think even post-Civil War, that dynamic is still there, you know, being right. sandwiched between two universities. You know, we're a town that is not only just intelligent and educated, but also is very interested in new ideas and new concepts. Right. And it's also, as we said, the biggest small town in America. Yes. So if you have your own idea, you know, you can really make it happen. You right. can find folks who dig it, and you can get out there and utilize, and, you know, you yes. can make things happen.
Yeah, there's all the potential for growth, but also the community that's going to be there to help lift you up.
Exactly. Like, even with Holler Poet Series, you know, like, that was just me and Eric having a conversation over a beer at Al's Bar. And we were like, you know, it was the 5th anniversary of the war in Iraq. And we were like, you know, we're not happy about this, and we need to let people know. So let's do an event. And we did an event called Poets for Peace that had, you know, pretty some pretty huge names in poetry there. And at the time, the poet laureate, Jane Gentry Vance, come out. And then after that, it was such a huge success that Josh Miller, who was the manager at Owls at the time, was asked Eric to do it every month. And that's how Holler Poets started. So really, it just sometimes, like, you know, some of the most amazing things in town just start from a conversation at a bar.
Just a spark.
Exactly.
We're talking to Chuck Clenny. He's the GM of this station that you're listening to right now, Lexington Community Radio, both LXL and LXU. So, Chuck, you said you went to UK for English. Mm-hmm. At what point did you decide you wanted to become fluent in Japanese and move to the East?
Well, that's a great question. So I got really into this artist named Fujita Sugiharu, who is kind of the guy who combined Eastern and Western art histories. He studied under this guy, Kuroda Seki, who was the first Japanese artist to go to France and study the Renaissance French oil techniques and bring them back and teach them to other artists in Tokyo. So Fujita was a progeny of Seki. So he was really one of the first to learn that technique and then blend the two. So I realized, not just him too, but other Japanese artists, and particularly modern Japanese art that I really love, I didn't get a chance to, read any of the literature about them because all the literature is in Japanese. So I decided, okay, well, if I'm going to learn about these guys and I'm going to learn about all this cool stuff going on over here, I got to learn Japanese. So I stopped taking German and switched over, and yeah, that's it.
And then what were you doing when, and I'm sorry, were you in Tokyo when you were over there?
I was in Gunma Prefecture, so it's about an hour and a half north of Tokyo.
Okay.
I was teaching English via the JET program, so teaching in 9 schools in rural Shimonita town, which I would describe as the hazard of Japan, right at the foothills of the Nagano Mountains, but beautiful, just a awesome place.
Was that your first time really, because you said you were from, Cincinnati. Was that your first time really living far from home?
It was, and it was also my first time not only living in a rural area, but living in an area where I'm very much the outsider. You know, old ladies are constantly checking in my basket at the store, trying to see what I'm buying, commenting on me of like, oh, maybe you don't need that whole milk.
Oh my goodness.
So it's kind of like, wow, okay, thanks, random old lady. I don't even know who you are, but thanks for the diet tip.
And so you were teaching English. Does that mean you were there for a year?
I was there for 2 years.
2 years?
Mm-hmm. Wow. From 2009 to 2011. And I was there during the huge earthquake that happened.
Wow.
Yeah, Tohoku.
We're talking to Chuck Clenny. He's the GM of Lexington Community Radio. Chuck, what's it like running two different stations, especially one in an unfamiliar language?
It's a challenge. I mean, this is quite a ship here at Lexington Community Radio. And, I love being able to not only, empower people, but also meet a lot of great folks in Lexington and what they're doing and learn more about their tasks and learn more about, resources available to the community. I think what we're doing here at Lexington Community Radio is all really unprecedented. I mean, even with, I know WRFL is in town and that's another non-commercial station, but most of their programming is music, which is great, but there's less of an emphasis on community programming and telling the story of Lexington and helping people know about what's going on in their town and resources available to them that they didn't know otherwise. And so I think what we're doing here is a little more social justice, a little more diverse as far as our programming goes. We've got everything from a craft beer show to a show about aging adventures, about Lexington's aging population, to working with the health department on healthy times. But then we also just have a Jazz Thursday with Stookie. It's jazz for 3 hours, or Serious Music with Dan, which is free jazz for 2 hours, So we have not only a wide variety of music, but also a wide variety of talk radio that's really telling people about what's going on in Kentucky, what's going on in Lexington. And I think the unprecedented nature of that makes it a little difficult sometimes to figure out what the best balance is, but it's also really exciting. So
those challenges have got to be enormous because it is community based. So you don't necessarily have the journalism students that you would get at a station on a college campus or something like that. So what are some of those challenges?
Yeah, I mean, right now with 95.7 with El Pulso, you know, that's the only Spanish language station in Lexington. And really, we're the only LPFM station, so 93.9 LXU, which you're listening to right now, and 95.7, you know, we're the only LPFM stations in town, so...
What does that mean, just for our audience?
LPFM stands for Low Power FM, so it's basically a designation that in 2010, the Community Radio Act freed up licenses for folks to apply for, to start community radio stations that their emphasis is on public wellness and hyper-local programming. So basically to help communities know what else is going on around. So I think the biggest challenge is with El Pulso, with 95.7, is really courting Lexington's Latino population and really understanding what they want as far as programming goes, what's important to them. But also, I think providing resources and information that a lot of the Latino population are too afraid to ask people about.
Right.
So I think it's great that we can not only be a resource to give them a vehicle to tell their stories and, you know, what they wanted to learn about, but also to provide vital information to folks that are afraid of asking due to retribution. So
yeah, that is... a huge, especially in immigrant populations of all kinds, not just Hispanic, and definitely not to generalize that all Hispanics are not American
aware
citizens.
Of the
but not knowing or having a language barrier and not being able to ask or fear that, you know, if I ask a question, then they're going to know something, or they're going to question, or even the idea of racial profiling comes up.
Yeah.
So having a venue like this where it's, you can just turn on your radio and you get the answers.
Right. It's not filled with professional broadcasters and as such.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's your community talking.
Yeah. And I think that's the real beauty of the station, is that anyone can be a part of it if they want and come tell their story. And if there's a show you don't know or a show that you don't hear, you know, come do it. You can come in and do your thing and tell us your story and share your information with us.
Is that your biggest stumbling block right now, is just getting people to come in and produce a show and have a show and participate?
Right now our schedule is pretty full. I mean, particularly with 93.9, yeah, I mean, we've been on the air for less than a year and really, you know, it's almost full. I mean, which is pretty amazing and pretty unprecedented. And really kudos to Hap Houlihan and Alexis Mesa.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Deborah, who before me and Rosa took over, you know, really built and brought,
Doug, a lot of people. And Doug, who set up all this stuff.
Yeah,
and
Doug Collins, who...
Hap had to deal with our software.
Yeah, Doug Collins, the shadow architect of all radio in Lexington and beyond. I mean, he should be commended for all of his amazing work that he does with Central Kentucky Radio Eye.
He is one of those guys you could hook up his brain to a car battery and drive probably to Louisville.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, anything with radio that isn't, you know, big box corporate radio here in town, Doug Collins has definitely had more than a hand in. Two hands in, I should say.
And what's the most fun part of your job? What do you enjoy the most?
That's a great question. Let's see.
You can only pick one thing, Chuck.
Yeah.
No, you can pick a few things.
Yeah, I think just learning more about Lexington, you know. I think before I took this job as a general manager, I thought I had a pretty good grasp. I mean, I've been living here for 11 years, minus two in Japan. And I thought, oh, yeah, I think I understand Lexington pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, I think I can come into this and bring some community together and point people in the right direction. And honestly, I mean, I started May 1st, and wow, every day I learn a tremendous amount of things that I don't know, that I didn't know before, and I'm just blown away by the people in this town that are doing things to help other people, and also to push forward and, you know, enhance our arts and our music. And
what's something you've learned recently that you had no idea was going on?
I really enjoy, there's a show that Glean Kentucky does before this one, actually, 10 o'clock, called Food Justice. Mm. And they just recently did a show about the Fresh Stop, which is an effort by a variety of folks to bring vegetables and to bring fresh, local vegetables and farm fresh products to, you know, food deserts, to low income communities. And that episode was great because it, you know, it really told me kind of the tangibilities and the questions that I had. It answered all of them and gave me even more info about when Fresh Stop is, you know, when people can go. So, like, that's something that I'm really hoping that somebody out there is just hanging out and, you know, maybe just eating Little Debbie snacks or something hears that and is like, wow, there are places in Lexington that I can go that for little to no cost I can get fresh vegetables, you know, delivered a block away from my house. I'm going to go do that. And then, you know, the power of radio is that that's really just information put out there to an ambiguous crowd. But really, if somebody hears that and somebody goes and gets those vegetables and eats them and their life is more fulfilled and they live a healthier life because of it, then, like, our mission here has been accomplished. Put out the mission accomplished banner.
as young as Lexington is, I think that we all can kind of remember a time where media wasn't as accessible, right? Where this is going off of you talking about the power of radio and how RFL and the on those venues sort of had a had a symbiotic relationship, right? Like they feed off of each other. Do you feel that radio still has the same power?
I think it does. And I think a lot of people have turned away from radio because of the homogenization of it, because of, I'm not going to say the company's names, but there are two big ones that own a predominantly large amount of media in America. And honestly, they just produce cookie cutter stations. They've destroyed DJing as an occupation. Yeah. They have regional locations that play the same music. They might hire a few local DJs to come in and do a drop and talk about the weather and traffic reports, but that's it. They're playing the same 35 songs, you know.
Mm-hmm. They all go to commercial at the exact same time. Yeah. You can tell which one of the two places you're talking about along the radio station you're listening to belongs on when the commercial breaks are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the way I look at it is like, Jesus, you know, how many songs have been produced that are worth playing since George Thorogood's Bad to the Bone came out or AC/DC's Back in Black? You know, like, yeah, those are great songs, but...
Or even, you know, Stairway to Heaven isn't the only song on that album. It's a really good album altogether. You could play one of the other ones.
Right, and I think really what it comes down to is challenging people is that the real role that radio should have is educating them about their local communities, but also challenging people to listen to new music and to listen to you know, things that they don't know. Radio should be an education. It shouldn't be a blanket to cover yourself up with, a security blanket of music you already know.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, there's so much, and right now there's so much more out there, I think. Just, you can make an album on your phone right now and upload it to a distribution website.
Yeah, and there...
And you don't... You know, it's a double-edged sword. It's like the keys to the kingdom are gone. Anybody can do it, but because anybody can do it, there's so much stuff out there. And then, of course, there's piracy and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah,
but you can... Who knows who's going to bring... It could be somebody who lives in Nebraska or North Dakota could just make a really good album, put it up, and get noticed.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's why. I think radio died for a while. Is because... The internet was created, so people have direct access to artists, and what Radiohead and Saul Williams and all these guys pay what you want for my album.
Mm-hmm.
That really revolutionized things, and I think people turned away from radio because the goal wasn't to educate people about new music. It was, how can we get people to listen so we can sell more commercials and make more money? Yeah. And that's really what the intent was for a long time. And so what we're doing here at Lexington Community Radio and WRFL is to do the exact opposite of that. Go full antithesis and just get away from that.
What can radio give people that maybe the internet can't? Because one of the things about the internet is you kind of have to know something or exists, or you have to think of something.
Yeah.
It's not going to just kind of fall into your lap the way it will.
I will say, everyone I know who's listening is listening through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and you can... I think what radio... the only thing that will save radio and bring it back is local programming.
Yeah.
Is giving people an education about what's going on up the street that they don't know, you know. And that's, I think, the magic of LPFM and why I'm so glad that legislation got passed in 2010, because, you know...
And that Deborah got the winning
band. Yeah, and shout out to Deborah Hensley for properly going through the channels to get these two stations going, because Lexington really did need a hyper local radio to tell the stories of our town and to really showcase the fabrics and the structure and just the brilliant people that make this town operate every day. And so that's what we're doing here 24/7.
And Kyle, I'm going to include the internet as part of broadcast. I'm going to expand the idea of radio onto the we're internet radio.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, and bring it to more.
But we're internet. We're internet radio as a corollary to our broadcast.
That's
so
true.
We're just streaming our broadcast pretty much. Yeah. I wouldn't say like
you don't see it as parallel.
I just see it as two different things. Yeah. I mean, there can be internet radio that caters to people's. You know, you could get on the internet and listen to like what's going on in Austria. You know, Vienna techno station. You could listen to that if you want, but it's not going to tell you anything about Lexington.
Have we heard from anybody half a world away who just kind of happened upon our what's like the farthest away you've heard from a person listening?
I was contacted by some folks in Japan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, who were listening in just because I had posted about it on social media.
Sure.
Yeah, and I know like
you're not still drinking that milk, are you?
yeah, that old lady came
back.
That's
what the message said. Yeah.
I was like, no, Osaka-san, sorry. But and like El Pulso, we're constantly getting calls from Latin America, from different states in Mexico, people who listen in, you know, by personal relationships from our DJs, but also just total strangers who might have some connection to Kentucky who discovered that now there's an all-Spanish, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Can you say how are more people listening over the internet than are over the airwaves?
Well, there's no way for us to really be able to
judge. We don't have a good idea of that just yet.
Yeah, I mean, we can tell based on phone calls and, like, social media likes, but beyond that, there's no way to quantify any type of terrestrial broadcasting. Gotcha. So.
All right, what are we thinking about as goals for the future? We're coming up on a year. Mm-hmm. So what's next year going to look like?
Well, next year, you know, we are continue to build. We really want to fill in our schedules and have them set. Bring in new shows, you know, all kinds of folks, but particularly building with El Pulso and bringing in, you know, more Spanish programming. So that's the big move right now. And also just funding the station as well. I think a lot of people don't realize that our station is entirely funded by grants and donations. And so, you know, we're a station for community members, but we're also a station that's funded by community members. And so I think it's a lot of working not only to provide great programming, but also to provide and bring in funding so that we can keep doing what we do.
And if people want to donate, where can they go do that?
They can go to our website at lexingtoncommunityradio.org, and we've got a link to our PayPal page.
And if they want to have a show, or they're interested in having a show, or just coming in and taking a look at the station, they can they find that information through the website also?
They can, yeah, absolutely. So we have a volunteer application that's on lexingtoncommunityradio.org, and there's one in English and in Spanish. So folks can get on there and fill that out, and we'll be in touch with you, because we want you to come in. I mean, honestly, the more people we have involved, the more power we have to make this town better.
Just as long as they don't take away any of my time.
Yeah.
All right. This has been Chuck Honey. He's the GM of Lexington Community Radio. Thank you for coming and talking
to us,
Chuck.
Thank you all for having me. It's been great.
All right. We're going to go to music really quick, but we're going to be back in about five, let's say.